Tonight, nuclear war of words. New details behind President Trump's fire and fury threat. Now the defense secretary puts North Korea on notice as NBC News learned some of the options being prepared for the president. FBI raid, a surprise pre-dawn search at the home of former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. What the feds were looking for. A mother's loss. The mayor of Nashville opens up about the death of her son from an overdose just 11 days ago, sharing their final messages and her message for every mom and dad. Sounded the alarm after far too many tragedies, kids being forgotten in the back seat, locked in hot cars. Tonight, life-saving new technology and puppy love connection. It's not just humans leveraging technology to find that perfect match. Nightly News begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening and welcome, everyone. If the stakes weren't so potentially grave, it might otherwise sound like a schoolyard squabble. The war of words escalating tonight between the United States and North Korea over nothing less than nuclear weapons. President Trump's fire and fury remarks met with North Korea's threat to attack a vital U.S. territory. And now today, Secretary of Defense Mattis with his own, more artfully worded, but no less threatening message, warning North Korea against actions that could lead to, quote, the destruction of its people. Our Bill Neely is in South Korea tonight with the latest developments.
On the streets of North Korea today, a show of defiance. The U.S., the enemy, Kim Jong-un and nuclear weapons, their defense, they said, against the threat from President Trump.
Fire and fury, like the world has never seen.
And from the island of Guam, now directly threatened by North Korea, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson turning down the temperature.
So the American people should sleep well at night.
And defending the president.
What the president is doing is sending a strong message to North Korea in language that Kim Jong-un would understand, because he doesn't seem to understand diplomatic language.
That message reinforced today in another stark warning from Defense Secretary Jim Mattis that North Korea should stop considering actions that would lead to the end of its regime and the destruction of its people. It would, he said, lose any conflict it initiates. Mattis's comments followed a new, very specific threat from North Korea, that it's preparing military plans to strike the American Pacific island of Guam. It's a sovereign U.S. territory, the size of Chicago, home to 160,000 U.S. citizens, and much closer to North Korea than to the U.S. mainland. The threat was unusually specific, mentioning the B-1 bombers stationed there at Anderson Air Force Base. The island's governor dismissed North Korea's threat.
There is no threat to our island.
Not everyone's convinced.
It is scary.
Anxiety, too, in Hawaii.
If a ballistic missile was launched from North Korea, it could reach this state in less than 20 minutes. Officials here in Hawaii say they are working on an emergency plan. They say the threat is real, but the risk is low.
It's a crisis growing fast. In just 5 weeks, North Korea has tested two long-range missiles that U.S. officials now believe could reach as far as Chicago.
This is the highest tension I've ever seen on the Korean Peninsula. It's a very grave situation, close to being a crisis.
Well, here in Seoul, South Korea's president is trying to calm nerves, saying there is no imminent crisis. But from North Korea in the last hour, more provocation. The military calling President Trump's threat a load of nonsense and saying only absolute force can work on him. Lester?
All right, Bill Neely in Seoul tonight. Thank you. North Korea's threat against Guam further complicates the U.S. options to halt North Korea's weapons program. Just over 2,000 miles southeast of the Korean Peninsula, Guam reads like a dot on the map over my shoulder. But of course, it's home to tens of thousands of Americans, and as NBC News has learned, would likely play a critical role in staging any U.S. military preemptive attack against North Korean targets. Our senior investigative correspondent, Cynthia McFadden, has details.
Tonight, NBC News can report the Pentagon has prepared a specific strike plan for a preemptive attack on North Korea should the president order one. Key to that plan, two senior military officials and two senior retired officers tell us, the battle-tested B-1 bomber, seen here in a military video, training for such a mission. The B-1, recently updated, has been a workhorse in Afghanistan and Iraq. Since the end of May, the B-1s have accelerated their training, conducting 11 practice runs, including one on Monday. Six B-1s are positioned in Guam. They are not nuclear capable. Here's what they're training for. Pairs of B-1s, supported overhead by satellites and drones, surrounded by fighter jets, as well as refueling and electronic warfare planes, have flown round trips, refueling multiple times, to practice what a real operation against North Korean missile sites might look like. The highly sophisticated strike package is designed to be largely invisible to facilitate a sneak attack. The targets, multiple sources say, approximately 24 North Korean missile launch sites and support facilities, which intelligence officials tell NBC News they feel confident they have accurately identified. The B-1s can carry a mix of weapons, as many as 168 bombs, or more likely, the new JASSM-ER, a highly accurate missile that can be fired hundreds of miles outside North Korean airspace.
Of all the military options you could consider, this would be one of the two or three that would be at least have a possibility of not escalating the situation. A single long-range strike against the nuclear program, a cyber offensive would be the second. Those are the only two military options that ought to be in serious consideration.
Nonetheless, Admiral Stavridis, who is the supreme allied commander of NATO, says he would counsel the president against the use of the U.S. military at this point.
Kim Jong-un would be compelled to respond. He would lash out militarily at a minimum against South Korea and potentially at longer-range targets, perhaps including Guam. That's a bad set of outcomes from where we sit today.
And Cynthia, as you know, last spring we took this broadcast to South Korea, and what we saw were U.S. and South Korean troops and forces working hand in hand. Could the U.S. do this alone? Would it do this alone?
Well, could, yes. Would is a different question. Less of the South Koreans have been full partners in these practice runs. But while the U.S. would be obliged to give the South Koreans approval for many kinds of missions, in this particular case, since the planes would launch from Guam and the missiles could be fired from outside Korean airspace, the U.S. could act unilaterally. Whether they would is a different matter.
All right. Cynthia McFadden, thank you. As the president faces perhaps his greatest test of leadership yet, he's also spawned a backlash among some who feel his fiery threat to the North was out of bounds. But while his choice of words may have taken some within his administration by surprise, the White House says his underlying message did not. Here's Kristen Welker.
When President Trump unleashed that heated warning to North Korea,
they will be met with fire and fury.
Those words were his, according to the White House, who said the president didn't discuss specific language with his top advisors, but had previewed the tone, including with Chief of Staff John Kelly. Still, the president's combative remarks sparked a backlash from some lawmakers.
Teddy Roosevelt once said, "Walk softly but carry a big stick." And that's not what's being employed here.
Privately, administration officials acknowledge they've spent the day trying to turn down the heat. But the president may have added to the mixed messaging, tweeting, "My first order as president was to renovate and modernize our nuclear arsenal. It is now far stronger and more powerful than ever before." While it's true Mr. Trump ordered a review of the nuclear arsenal in January, former President Obama had already launched an effort to upgrade the stockpile, and it's a project that will take at least 30 years to complete, making it impossible for there to have been any significant changes this year. The president sent a second tweet today saying, "Hopefully we will never have to use this power." Tonight, some supporters say Mr. Trump's unconventional, tough foreign policy talk shows strength.
This is how North Korea talks, so why not give it a shot to say, "Hey, we got some fire and fury for you, too, if you want to play that game."
But critics warn.
This is the kind of thing you'd expect to hear from the North Koreans, not from the President of the United States. And frankly, it's not the kind of rhetoric that will reassure our allies.
The president's leadership facing its fiercest test yet in what's shaping up to be one of the most dramatic standoffs since the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Every president of the last 70 years has essentially felt that what matters in a crisis like this is not tough talk, but tough action.
The president spoke to his Secretary of State for an hour today, and tomorrow Vice President Mike Pence will meet with the president here in New Jersey. North Korea will undoubtedly be the key focus. Lester.
Kristen Welker, thank you. We're learning more tonight about how intensely Special Counsel Robert Mueller is looking at former officials of the Trump campaign. Turns out one of their homes was recently searched by the FBI. It was a surprise pre-dawn raid on Paul Manafort. Our justice correspondent Pete Williams has details on what they were looking for.
With absolutely no warning, FBI agents showed up before dawn to search the suburban Washington, D.C. apartment of Paul Manafort, a Donald Trump confidant who played a central role in his presidential campaign for 6 months. The search 2 weeks ago at this building in Alexandria, Virginia, came as a surprise. Manafort's spokesman says he has, quote, consistently cooperated with law enforcement and other serious inquiries and did so on this occasion as well. But a former federal prosecutor says the surprise search is a sign that Robert Mueller's investigators don't trust him.
The execution of a search warrant means that there is a concern that the individual has documents that are harmful to him that he may not turn over cooperatively.
While Mueller's main task is investigating meddling by the Russians in the election and whether anyone in the U.S. helped them do it, law enforcement officials say Mueller has also been looking intensely at Manafort's foreign business dealings. The officials say FBI agents who searched his home were looking for tax and banking records from his work overseas, including in Ukraine and Cyprus. To get a warrant for that kind of search, FBI agents must persuade a federal judge that there's probable cause to believe a crime has been committed. Manafort has repeatedly said he did nothing wrong and has met with and provided documents to congressional investigators looking at Russian meddling. Now the search, a clear sign that his legal problems are getting worse. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
In France today, an hours-long manhunt came to the end in a high-speed chase on a highway. The driver of a BMW arrested after police say that car was used to ram into a group of soldiers outside Paris, six injured in all. French counterterrorism officials have opened an investigation, authorities searching for anyone else who may have been involved. Back home, a deeply personal warning to moms and dads from the mayor of Nashville, who lost her only child a little more than a week ago to the opioid crisis gripping our country. Tonight, she is opening up and revealing the deadly combination of drugs that took her son's life. The mayor spoke to our Gabe Gutierrez.
This is Megan Berry's family during better times. 10 days ago, the Nashville mayor got a knock on her door at 3 a.m.
Your first thought is that you've had a police officer who's been injured. And you need to get dressed, you need to go to the hospital, and you need to comfort a family.
Instead, it was she who would need comforting. Her son, Max, had just died of a drug overdose.
Did it come as an absolute shock?
Yeah, totally.
You didn't see it coming at all?
I didn't see it coming.
She says Max had been to rehab once before for abusing Xanax, but he'd recently graduated from college and moved to Colorado.
And he was your only child?
He was our only child, yeah. Our only.
Today, the mayor revealed he had a lethal combination of drugs in his system, including Xanax, cocaine, and the opioids methadone and hydromorphone.
I want to just shake him and say, what were you thinking?
It is a tremendous problem in our country.
On Tuesday, President Trump stopped short of declaring a national emergency, but he pledged to ramp up law enforcement to combat the opioid crisis.
Is that enough?
No, we're not going to arrest our way out of this problem. You need having access to beds and treatment.
Has it sunk in yet?
I don't think so. I think that this hole that I have in my heart will never be filled. See, right here.
She shared with us their final texts.
I'm so grateful that the last words we said and the last text we sent said, I love you.
Max Berry was 22. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Nashville.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, stopping hot car deaths, the new technology that could save children's lives following a wave of tragedies inside scorching vehicles this summer. Tonight, charges are pending against the driver of a daycare van in Orlando who allegedly forgot a 3-year-old boy. Investigators say the boy died after being trapped inside the hot van for hours. It's the latest tragedy in a year that has seen dozens of children die in hot cars. But now there's potentially life-saving technology on the way. NBC News national investigative correspondent Jeff Rossin got an exclusive look for tonight's Rossin Reports.
This summer, police officers breaking car windows, desperately trying to rescue young kids trapped inside hot cars. And it's been a tragic year. 32 children already killed in hot cars, where temperatures can spike fast. Even when it's just 70 degrees outside, it can reach nearly 90 inside the car in just 10 minutes.
But now, new technology to prevent these tragedies. I'm in Michigan, where researchers have developed a new product that would actually alert you if you walk away from your car and there's a baby still in the back seat. This is David Brink, who's leading the team. How does it work? What is it?
Well, we've installed a very sophisticated electronic sensor in the ceiling of this vehicle that detects a child sleeping anywhere in the back seat of this vehicle.
That sensor uses special radio frequency waves to detect even the smallest breaths and chest movements.
So what if I walk away from the car? What happens?
You get a flashing of lights, an audible sound, and a text message to your phone.
You get a text message? How fast?
In less than a minute.
Time to try it out. We put a baby mannequin that actually mimics breathing in the car, and I drive around the block to park.
All right, out of the car. Let's see how long it takes for the alert to actually go off and how far you'd get away from the car. It's only been a few seconds here.
Attention. And
there it goes.
An unattended child has been detected.
That fast, and the lights are blinking, and I'm going to keep an eye on my screen here. Yep, there it is. There's the text message right there. Child forgotten. I'd know that fast.
The company says the sensor could be rolled out by some car manufacturers as soon as next year, hopefully making this a thing of the past. Jeff Rossin, NBC News, Auburn Hills, Michigan.
Up next tonight, dinner by Oprah, the media mogul expanding her empire to the supermarket aisle. Watching the tropics tonight, Franklin has become the first Atlantic hurricane of the season, moving toward Mexico with winds of 75 miles an hour. Hurricane watches and warnings along the coast, where it's already starting to come down hard. It's expected to make landfall in Veracruz late tonight or early tomorrow. Oprah fans, you could soon welcome the media mogul to your very own dinner table. Winfrey is launching her own line of foods with what they say are healthy twists, like mashed potatoes with mashed cauliflower added for good measure. The new line is called Oh, That's Good, and you can find it in stores starting in October. Word from the boss tonight confirming he's coming to Broadway. He's been rumored for months, and now Bruce Springsteen says he'll make his Broadway debut this October with an 8-week run at the Walter Kerr Theater with 960 seats, a lot smaller venue than the stadiums he's used to. He'll perform 5 shows a week, no doubt soon to become some of the hottest tickets in town. When we come back, Must Love Dogs, the high-tech matchmaking service that's kind of like Tinder for canines. Finally tonight, matchmaking apps and websites have certainly revolutionized the way people find dates these days. Now technology is also changing the way people find new best friends of the four-legged variety. NBC's Joe Fryer shows us how.
In SoCal Silicon Beach, technology has gone to the dogs.
She's so soft.
And cats. And even rabbits.
I'll feed her.
So many.
This is the Wallace Annenberg Pet Space, where they've decided if humans can have dating profiles, then these guys should have adoption profiles, advertised on really big touch screens.
So we touch on here and we learn about Clyde, and his bio pops up. He's 4 years old. He's 68 pounds.
That info can be quickly shared.
I like the sharing ability that you can text a friend or a boyfriend when you find the pet that you like.
PetSpace also has an app with all those profiles, an interactive approach to adoption.
You know, we just want to have that connection. We want people to meet the dog and fall in love.
The pets come from L.A. County shelters, but instead of cages or kennels, they live in suites with TVs that broadcast pet-friendly shows.
Any tips on cutting their nails?
Grooming sessions are open for all to see. Curious spectators can simply touch the glass to ask a question.
Do the dogs ever try to bite you?
Nah.
It's not just clicks and cuddles. Researchers here are working to better understand the connection between pets and people.
The goal here is really to celebrate and strengthen the human-animal bonds.
Estelle Atney is adopting Pixie. That process is completed online. The connection is quite real.
Oh, my goodness. She's amazing. She's so cute. I love her.
As great as this place is, they know the best pet space is a home. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Playa Vista, California.
2 minutes of pure cuteness. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Wednesday night. I'm Lester Holt for all of us at NBC News. Thank you for watching, and good night.